I'm going to start. Basically, I want to introduce. It's a topic which we don't often talk about as Christians. It's sexual integrity. Now, this is an area which is a bit uncomfortable. So, I apologize to you if it makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable. I want to share with you some research that we've done in Cambodia. Now, the reason we did this research is because we've been looking into the demand of sexual exploitation in Cambodia and looking at some of the issues around why if you think of the sex industry as having supply, which is the victims, and then demand, which is that the men who use the victims, mostly men, then we need to understand the way that people think, why they think that way, and what we can do to try and address the thoughts and patterns of behavior that they have. So, but then when we did that, we thought, we really shouldn't just point the finger at those naughty men out there that are doing the bad stuff. What about us? So we decided to do this small research project. It was a completely anonymous survey using SurveyMonkey, and the information about it was distributed through an email network that goes out to the international Christian community in Phnom Penh and in Cambodia. So I apologize. I know this isn't relevant to you in Manila because it's Phnom Penh and Cambodia, but I think that the figures, if you repeated this survey here, I think it would be very interesting to see the results, to see how similar it might be. Now, remember, this is Christian expatriate men. These are missionaries, these are development workers and others who work in Cambodia. Okay, so we set the survey up on SurveyMonkey, which most of you know is completely confidential and secure. We asked some general demographics, we asked some direct questions, and we also asked some indirect questions as well. Okay, next. We had 99 responses, which I was quite pleased about. I didn't think we were going to get quite so many as that. The results of those who were from other religions or that the surveys weren't really very clear, they hadn't, we discarded. So we had 82 valid responses. Okay, next. Okay, so we asked some questions. What's your view on porn? Well, you can see they're overwhelmingly negative. Nearly everyone said that they thought it was negative, which is what you'd expect from a Christian community. Okay, next. How often do you view porn? Was a different question. Over half the people said that they had indulged into it to some extent, 20% regularly. Now, I was teaching in a seminary recently, and they asked me to specifically talk on this issue of porn. When I went in there, they said to me, if we found any of our students looking at porn, then they'd be asked to leave. Now, that to me was a bit of a sad, I felt that was sad, because how can you deal with it if you can't, if people aren't, you're putting people in a position where they would be afraid to say that they had a problem with it. So I think we need to be more transparent, more caring, and more thoughtful about this issue. Okay, next. What's your view on prostitution? Now, this is a kind of slightly strange question because we only gave them the responses of either positive, negative, or neutral. But they didn't really have an opportunity to expand on it. But we still, nevertheless, we wanted to get some idea. As you'd expect, again, with the Christians, it's overwhelmingly negative. Why do you think men use prostitutes? Now, this question, I think, is very significant. I know we have to be careful not to read too much into stuff, but if you look, 25% said loneliness, 33% said lack of intimacy. And when we did this survey with secular men in expatriate men in Cambodia, and to make a comparison, their figures for those were much less. They were more than half less than that. So, to me, that says a lot about where Christian men often are. Men in leadership, often very lonely, isolated. They do think they try and be the big man who's doing everything, the man that's on a pedestal, But when it comes to it, if you actually dig deep, you find that they're very lonely people. Okay, next. Have you had a traditional massage where a masseur touched you sexually? So a third of men said that they had. Next. Yeah, so a third said they had. Okay, then when we ask the next question, how did you respond when you were touched? Only one third took action against it. So 46% ignored it. I can't read the percentage, but it's quite a high one, I think. About a third told them to actually stop, and then 23% encouraged them to continue. So basically, that sends a message: don't put yourself in that position in the first place. But we'll talk a bit more about that later. Okay. Traditional to erotic massage. If you look on this one, can we do the next? You can see there, more singles than married took action against it. You can see nearly double there. Okay, next one. Have you ever had sexual intercourse with a prostitute? 11% admitted that they had. Now, in my experience with any kind of survey that you're doing about sexual behavior, it's usually nearly always underestimated. So this is a conservative amount. But that to me is still of concern. That's more than 1 in 10 men have actually had sexual intercourse with a prostitute. It makes you wonder, what is the impact on their work and on what they're doing? Do you feel that erotic massage is the same as prostitution? Only 43% said yes. A number said no, about a quarter said no, and then 15% said it depends, 25% said didn't give an answer. Now, that to me is a concern, because that means that there's a lot of men that are convincing themselves, well, it's not so bad as prostitution. That's what it feels like to me. I don't know what you get from that. But it looks to me like they're kind of saying, okay, well, it depends. I'm not really. Do you know what I mean? But let me tell you, if you're having sex and you're paying for it, even if it's erotic massage or something else, it's still prostitution. It's still prostitution. So don't try and convince yourself it's not, because it is. Okay. When we look at these three areas, so looking at porn more than monthly, having sex with a prostitute, intentional erotic massage, we wondered whether they were all the same people, but actually they're not. So 29% of men have one of those three things. So we're basically talking about a third of men have got an issue that they really need sorting out. Okay. Are you fearful that if honest about any aspect of your sexual behavior that you may face discipline? 27% said yes. Nearly half actually said no, which is kind of encouraging. It means that they feel that their organizations wouldn't throw them out. But then the problem is that when people, that there are different ways in which organizations deal with this issue. One is that they take it very seriously, and then they take appropriate action and they find help for the person. The other is that they try and sweep it under the carpet and pretend it's not really happening. So that's not appropriate. The second one isn't appropriate at all, but unfortunately it happens rather too much. Okay, next. How likely would you go to church, mission, NGO leader to discuss sexual issues? 31% said they'd already done so, but 29% said only if desperate, and 24% said never. Okay, next one. Would you be likely to receive or be part of any counselling therapy support for your sexual behaviour? 16% said yes. They would be interested in help. That's not so much, is it? 20%, less than 20%, but it's still... But the challenge was, after we had done this, we gave people a number that they could contact. Not many people actually followed it through. So many of them had the initial feeling that they wanted to do something about it. Not so many actually followed that through. So if we look on here, you can see, interestingly, when of those that seek help, it's those that are single rather than the married, and it's those that have either been in Cambodia for more than 5 years or less than 1 year. They're the ones that are the most likely to do something about it. I thought that's quite interesting that you've got that inverse bell curve there. Okay. So what's next? Well, we haven't just done this study in Cambodia just so that we can point the finger and say, look at you naughty boys, what are you doing? We've done it because we want to provide help for people. We want to say, this is an important issue that we have to address. Now, I know that most of you are Filipino, that you think, well, yes, but we're not like that. We're not like the expatriates. It's easy to point the finger at other people and say we're not like them. But just look at yourself and think about this. Is this something that you need to deal with? Because, frankly, if the church doesn't get a handle on this, in the next few years, this is going to be the major issue that affects the church. This is going to be a major issue that affects the church. I think in the West now, we've got a little bit too obsessed with pornography being the only issue. But it's not. And certainly in the East, prostitution is so accessible and so cheap and so available that it's a problem. So in Cambodia, we've developed a specialist sexual addiction group for Christians who have got an issue with this problem, whether it's pornography or other issues, that they can come to. The Hope campaign is a campaign to try and encourage men to abstain from using pornography. We have some counselling available from Kenneth Taylor, who's one of the guys who was involved in developing this survey. And then we started to have 6 monthly orientations for guys coming into Cambodia that are starting to do stuff with this, that are starting to work in Cambodia, just so that they can be aware of this highly sexualized environment that we live in. We've managed to present this to most of the international churches in Cambodia, and also the men's prayer breakfast, the Christian leaders' lunch, and so on. We're encouraging people to be accountable on a personal level in twos or threes or more. But you know, sometimes I think it's not so much about everyone having to be confess their innermost sins to a big group. We're not talking about that. We're just talking about men having the courage to have a friend if they're really having a hard time, that they'll go and go out with them and have a beer or a coffee or something, and just to be able to share with them, so that when they're vulnerable, that they can feel, okay, I've got a friend who I know I can go to. I think that's the big problem. That's a huge problem in Cambodia, and in other parts of Asia, is that men, we're too individualistic and we're too focused on frankly, I think there's a lot of men that if they drop dead tomorrow, there wouldn't be a lot of people who would really know, a lot of people who really cared. And it's not because they're not doing good work, it's just because they're not vulnerable enough to share with somebody, another guy. We're in the process with member care is a big issue. I believe that there's a lot of organisations who are trying to do member care, but they've missed this out off the things they want to include in the issues. We need to include marriage enrichment and counselling. But there is a challenge in this that of course men are afraid that they're going to lose faith. And so they need to get pushed through that barrier and make themselves a little bit vulnerable so that they can receive healing and their friends as well can receive healing too. Okay, so that's a quick... next one, please. You know, for those of us who are still struggling with sexual sin, we need to get to the point where we're kneeling before the Father and seeking genuine healing. And that may only come when we've got really got to rock bottom, but I want to pray that people can think about how they can prevent getting to that rock bottom, where they could take the courage to do something now, not later on. And then for those of us who are not struggling with sexual sin, we need to be careful not to be like the resentful older son who is indignant of the father's lavish graciousness. Okay, next. Okay, lessons from the fall of King David. So you heard that incredible passage. I don't know when the last time you read that, but it's a very powerful passage. Okay, next. Okay, can you just skip through these ones, please? So we've read this passage, so just skip through the... Thanks. Okay. So what were the consequences of David's lust in this? Well, he seduced Bathsheba. And sometimes, I think, as a young man, when I read this passage, that was what my focus was all on. It was like, oh, so he really, you know, he had sex with somebody he shouldn't have had sex with. But think about the consequences. The consequences were massive. First of all, he got her pregnant. He violated God's command to be the moral leader. He violated personal conscience. He betrayed some of the closest comrades. You know, Uriah, her father Eliam, and her grandfather Ahithophel were one of David's 30 mighty men. So three of the most, his key inner core were all affected by this. Okay. So David abused his authority by ordering General Joab to alter the battle plans in order to ensure Uriah's death. Many other soldiers lost their lives due to intentional bad battle plan. There was multiple family grief due to many deaths. Massive impact. The morale of the army were damaged. Everyone was confused by Joab's seeming stupidity. The blame was put onto Joab. No investigation was done for the loss compared to the situation with Achan. It continued to cover up by shifting responsibility for the deaths on God. The question is, could this have been prevented by better self-awareness and better accountability? Could something like this be prevented in your life? If so, how? There's a very interesting book that came out. Now, this was in with American pastors called Clergy Sexual Misconduct, A Systems Approach to Prevention, Intervention, and Oversight. Now, I was surprised that there'd be a book that was dedicated to this issue, but this the first survey was conducted in 1991. I think basically the reason why this book has been developed is because of the way that America sues churches, and if somebody is got a problem like this, so there's money involved, and so they're chasing them, trying to get deal with it. But the first survey was conducted in 1991, and since then there's been 25 research articles that have been published. Taken together, it's estimated that 10 to 14% of pastors have inappropriate sexual contact with someone. This is in the States. 30% engage in sexual behavior they themselves consider inappropriate. 15% meet the need addicted to internet pornography. Now, if we look at a systems view of vulnerability, there are different levels. One is intrapersonal, one is interpersonal, one is host environment, and one is the work church environment. These are things which we need to take into consideration when we're thinking about prevention. Okay, next. So why are missionaries or pastors and people like yourselves particularly at risk? Well, in this study that was done on pastors, 80% of the sexual addicts came from disengaged families, 77% from rigid families. So one, you've got a family where it's chaotic, there isn't good parenting, and the other's the opposite, where the parenting's very heavy-handed, there's a lot of corporal discipline, and so on. And that can be typical in some families that have got, you know, strong Christian ethic. So 70% indicated they had currently had no close friends. So that's what I was talking about before, about loneliness. Okay. One of the personality traits is narcissism. That's when people feel that life owes them, basically. It's about, you know, the feeling that you have an entitlement to things, or anxiety personality traits. And then the phenomena of burnout is also associated with background of loneliness, shame, and poor attachments. Okay. Now, did you know that the average age a pastor or missionary experiences burnout is age 40 to 45? Did you know that the average age a pastor or missionary has an affair is 40 to 45? So these are dangerous. This is a danger time we need to be aware of. Clergy burnout. Burnout's most likely to occur when the person has a fear of intimacy. The person overworks out of a fear of failure or rejection. The person puts their emotional and physical energy into their careers because things are not going well at home. Does this sound familiar to any of you? The relationship with God declines as a consequence of burnout. David's personal relationship with God was not enough to get him through the true nature and scope of his sinfulness. It took the intervention of Nathan. When burnout occurs, a pastor may feel anger and fatigue and have little motivation for spiritual disciplines or accountability. Relationship with others declines as a consequence of burnout. The combination of loneliness, unbalance, narcissism, lack of accountability to God or man, and burnout creates a perfect storm for lust and sexual misconduct to occur. So why are missionaries and pastors at-risk groups? Well, the other factor is interpersonal factors. So one is marital conflict or estrangement. 41% of clergy who acted out sexually acknowledged marital dissatisfaction. 75% of those with long-standing 5 to 20 years marital dissatisfaction were at risk of sexual misconduct. That's why we need to do marriage enrichment. That's why that's why churches need to be more caring and encouraging of couples and see the value of marriage. Okay. So then there are the host environmental factors. Cambodian culture, and I know this is true of the Philippines, so that's why I'm teaching this today, leans much more towards normalization of prostitution as compared to most missionary sending countries. Now, I know that here with a strong Catholic sense, it isn't the same way. Like in I think there's much more of a fatalistic Hindu Buddhist philosophy in Cambodia. But here, prostitution is tolerated to a huge extent. I mean, Jarrett and I have been to a number of the places where prostitution is happening, and it's massive industry here. You know, there are some countries in Southeast Asia that are completely dependent on the sex industry for their economy. And I think Philippines is one of those countries where it's a big part of your economy here is bringing people in for the sex industry. So this is not something we can ignore. Massage businesses are ubiquitous. There's no clear boundaries between legitimate massage and erotic massage. You can go into and have a massage, even in quite nice hotels and spas and places like that. And it's not clear. This is things that happen. You're talking about people who don't have. You're talking about the masseurs often don't have. They're not paid very much. They're dependent on tips to get enough salary, and so they then can have. Come on to you and say, do you want me to give you something more erotic? Or they can start massaging you in places that you didn't want them to massage, even if you went in intentionally with just having, you know, wanting just a basic back massage, because they want the money. So you can't blame them, but this is something that happens. And so we need to be aware and not naive and try and kid ourselves that it's okay. So, and then the other thing is the culture of the church demands superhuman characteristics of the pastor or missionary. You know, it's considered unthinkable that someone in the ministry can be capable of sexual sin. So that means we don't talk about this stuff. And so, but what a long way to fall. It's a huge way to fall, isn't it? And so then when somebody does fall, they're pointed down to with a finger, like, how could they do that? That's terrible. There's lots of gossip. I mean, you will know situations, I'm sure, of pastors and others who've fallen, and then they're completely discarded. And now where are they, I'd like to ask. I think often they end up going away from the church because they're so rejected by the church, which is not an appropriate response either. The pastor's expected to have attributes of leadership and humility and a servant heart, but 90% of pastors feel inadequate for the task. 90%, because of the expectations that are put on them. 25% have experienced a firing in the past due to having not met the expectations of the congregation. So, are there intrapersonal factors in your life that make you at risk for sexual misconduct? Narcissistic, dependent, or anxious traits, family background of abuse, rigidity, or emotional neglect? Have you experienced burnout? Where are you with that now? Are there interpersonal factors in your life that make you vulnerable? Marital discord or lack of intimacy, no close friendships, lack of accountability? Have you seriously given support and accountability a real shot in dealing with stubborn habits and sins? Are there host environmental factors in your life that make you vulnerable? Are you triggered by the ever-present availability of prostitutes and bar girls? Do you utilize massage for relaxation? If so, do you have clear boundaries that you don't violate? Regarding environmental factors, do you have policies that encourage, discourage open communication about sexuality and the reality of sexual temptation by both men and women in your organization? Do you have meaningful, not legalistic, accountability with your team? Do you place excessively high expectations on your staff, thus contributing to drivenness and burnout? Do you have clear protocol in the event that inappropriate sexual conduct in your organization occurs, i.e. support for victims, family, and perpetrator? And sometimes that's the challenge, is that one of those three get helped, but the others don't. Okay. I think that's it. Okay, that was a quick one. I'm sorry if I've gone a bit over what I should have done. I know that this is disturbing, and if there's any of you who want to talk about it afterwards, I'm happy to talk with you. But I think this is an area, maybe BNTS are different than a lot of other seminaries that I've been to, but I know that this is an issue that often really isn't talked about enough, and I think that we need to address it head on. All right, thank you very much, everyone. Thanks.